Making After School Cool.
Welcome to the Making After School Cool podcast, the link between research, practice, and theory for those interested in the activities youth are involved with during non-school hours. The Making After School Cool podcast is produced by Case for Kids, a division of Harris County Department of Education, and I'm your host, Mike Wilson. In many communities, children and young people are one of the most vulnerable populations. Unfortunately, promoting children's rights sometimes unintentionally get ignored as community leaders focus on other concerns. Yet, when children's rights are overlooked, it can result in extremely difficult and heartbreaking situations. For example, I recently seen on the nightly news two very young children being left alone after being dropped from the top of a fence along the U.S.-Mexican border. My initial reaction was shock, wondering how adults could do such a thing to small children. However, I didn't know the backstory that caused this act to occur, so I'm in no way in a position to judge. Yet I still do wonder what the future for these young children will be like. The thing I do know is this: no matter what your political affiliation is, everyone should agree children must be protected and treated humanely. Fortunately, this fact has been recognized globally for over 90 years with the creation of the Geneva Declaration on the Rights of the Child. This declaration states that all people owe children the right to have resources for their healthy development, the right to receive help in time of need, the right to have access to economic assistance, the right to be protected from abuse, and the right to be raised in a manner that instills social consciousness and duty. In 1948, the United Nations General Assembly created the International Children's Emergency Fund, better known as UNICEF. And since that time, UNICEF has provided financial assistance for children's needs throughout the world. So, to gain a better understanding of how Houston residents are informed of children's rights, this edition of the Making After School Cool podcast highlights the implementation of the City of Houston's Child Friendly Cities Initiative. To speak on this project is Laura Cuellar, the Program Manager of UNICEF's Child Friendly Cities Initiative. She is with the Mayor's Office of Education in the City of Houston. Ms. Cuellar is an advocate for youth with a passion for creating educational opportunities for marginalized communities, including immigrants, low-income families, and first-generation children born in the U.S. Her desire to help others led her to become a community organizer and coalition builder. Laura has mentored over 400 college students and is experienced at creating partnerships to build community among diverse individuals, groups, and organizations. So I'm very pleased to have Laura Cuellar as today's guest on the Making After School Cool podcast. Laura, how are you doing today?
Hi, Michael. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So, we're going to start off with you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in being a community organizer.
My background is I was born in Colombia, and I came to the United States when I was 2 years old. And I was a dreamer. I was an undocumented baby. My mom brought me in her arms, crossing the river and going to California. And so for most of my life, I actually grew up undocumented and went to my undergrad at UCLA. I was an undocumented student, or a dreamer, as some of us like to identify ourselves. And also come from a, you know, very much working class background. And both of my parents were immigrants from Colombia. So I say that because that really shaped my world perspective. I was constantly part of those marginalized communities, either because I was a young Latina or a first-gen college student or a documented migrant. So I think for me that provided a lens of just the inequities and the gaps and the needs that sometimes youth face as they're trying to grow up and establish their life and be successful in school. A lot of limitations that happens if you come from certain communities, and so I faced those. The good news is I also faced a community that was willing to support me, and I had a great college counselor, Mr. Castillo from Shure High School in Montebello. Shout out to him. And I had my parents who were very supportive. I had supportive teachers. I went to a school that had a lot of services that were free, like SAT prep that was free. And that really kind of shaped my perception of, you know, if youth have a village, right, as we know, like it takes a village, Youth can succeed regardless of their backgrounds or barriers or challenges. But we do need a village, and we need that village to be coordinated, because there is a lot of help out there. And in the city of Houston, we can see that there's a lot of amazing nonprofits, so many amazing educators. But are we coordinated? Are we aligned? And are we communicating? And I think that's what really brought me to Houston and the UNICEF Child Friendly Cities Initiative.
Well, thank you so much for providing our listeners with a little bit of a backstory, because I think there's times when people hear these terms and sometimes there's stereotypes that's thrown out there. And unless you could put a face, or in this case, a voice, with a person who has experienced some of these things, then we go through that rabbit hole and only listen to the stereotypes and don't see the other side or the other perspective. So thank you so much for sharing. Can you tell our listeners what's the purpose of the Child Friendly Cities Initiative along with the project's goals?
Yes, so the UNICEF Child Friendly Cities Initiative is really a opportunity and a global framework to align local services, programs, policies to actively work to establish and protect the rights of children. So a child-friendly city is a town or a community in which the voices, the needs and priorities and the rights of children are an integral part of public policies, programs and decisions. It's also a place where, you know, children can be protected from exploitation, violence, abuse, where they have access to quality social services, where they can experience a quality education, inclusive education and skills development. And also very important is a child-friendly city is a city that allows youth and uplifts youth to express their opinion and have influence in the decision-making process of the policies that directly affect them. What we're trying to create is a safe, secure, and supportive environment for children to grow up, but also to be leaders in their own lives.
Often people view the protection of children's liberties as the responsibility of their parents. Why do you think it's important for everyone to recognize children do have rights?
So I think what's really interesting when we talk about children's rights is a lot. I've been working with youth for over 10 years. And before that, I was a young person myself. I didn't know there was such a thing as children's rights. I was not aware, and I find that a little bit problematic because I was working with youth directly every day, and the fact that I didn't know what their rights were didn't provide me a guide to what is it that they need. So for example, when I started my work in the after school space, I wanted to help kids go to college. And so I thought that helped me a lot. You know, going to college really prepared me for what was to come and helped me financially as well. So I'm like, I'm going to help kids do that. And I thought, what do they need? SAT prep, college application help, maybe helping them with the financial aid application. But pretty soon I found out that youth needed more than that. Youth needed access to food. They needed access to housing. They needed mentors. They came to me to talk to me about their mental health issues, their issues with their family. And so because I didn't have that child's rights framework, I didn't understand that youth need a lot more than just academic support. They need, if we want them to succeed academically, they need to be able to have access to a lot of different services and supports across their entire lifespan. And so I think that's why it's important to think about child rights and for all children, because it really would give service providers or parents or youth themselves an idea of what they truly need to, a more holistic idea of what they need to be well and participate healthy in a healthy manner in society. I think that's why it's really important to be able to provide this education on children's rights and also in terms of what your question is, why do you think it's important for everyone to recognize, is because youth don't come across just their parents. Youth come across a lot of adults in their lives. And for some, a youth sort of that comes from more of a, let's say, a low-income background, or sometimes youth come from maybe a background where their parents are not around. It's very important they have other adults in their lives that are able to support them and help them and be guides. And I think there's a lot of research out there that says that really youth that succeed is because they've been able to identify at least three adults in their lives that are supporting them with their mental health, with their emotional well-being, their academic success. So that's why sometimes we need more than parents. Parents, a lot of times they're engaged, they're interested, but they're also really busy. And they are, if we think about the times we are right now where, you know, low-income families are really struggling financially, parents are taking up more than one job, two or three jobs. So as much as they would like to be there for their kids, they can't because they need to provide the basic needs. However, as I just mentioned, kids need more than basic needs. So that's why we need other adults to step up and be mentors. And we also need adults that are already in their lives, like teachers, coaches, clergy people, to understand what else do youth need besides what we normally think is our standard rule.
So I can assume that doing all the things that you just stated takes a lot of time. What is the process for implementing a UNICEF child-friendly cities initiative?
Yes, it takes a lot of time. And again, that's why we also need a village.
Exactly.
Youth need a village, and the child-friendly cities initiative needs a village. And so the process is very involved. The first stage is the stage we're in right now in the city of Houston. We're doing a situational analysis on the states of children's rights in the city. And so we are analyzing the different aspects of a child in terms of access to social services, also play and leisure, safety and inclusion. We're analyzing different indicators in those different areas, or different goal areas, and we are collecting a lot of data based on that. So we're collecting data in two different ways. One is through a government assessment, where we're collecting more quantitative data from different agencies across the city and different departments. And then the other aspect is community assessment workshops. So the community assessment workshops are workshops where we talk to youth and service providers, and we collect information in terms of what are they seeing on the ground that children need and children are being challenged by during this time. And so ultimately, we don't want to just rely on the government data. The government data is great, and we're using that, but we also want to pair it with what's happening now in the community. So just to make sure that we try to make sure we have an alignment on some areas, but if we don't have an alignment, then we know why and what are the gaps. So for example, there's not a lot of mental health data right now that's accessible and through the government assessment. However, when we're doing these community assessment workshops or some of the newer surveys we're doing, we are finding that that's becoming a big topic. So that's why we need to do both. We need to get data that is provided directly from the community and then data that has also been collected before.
Since this is a new project, which areas in Houston are you focusing on and why were they selected?
So what we did is we tried to look at the government assessment and we looked at several indicators. So for example, where were neighborhoods that had high concentration of children, so high percentages of children. We didn't want to pick a community that had mostly, you know, a senior citizen community. We wanted to make sure that there was a lot of children. And then the other thing we were looking at were areas that had high poverty rates and had indicators that showed us that there was children there living that were in high need and would benefit from extra supports from the city or from local nonprofits. We know Houston is a very diverse city, so we were also looking at diversity. We wanted to pick different neighborhoods that demonstrated that the diversity that exists in Houston. So ultimately, some of the communities we landed on were Sunnyside, Gulfton, A-Leaf Westwood, Greens Point, Trinity Houston Gardens, and Houston Heights. Now, A-Leaf Westwood, for example, is a neighborhood that we picked because it has a percentage of children, so over the 25% of people in A-Leaf Westwood are children, but also they have one in every three children lives in poverty, so that's over 12,000 children in A-Leaf. And then finally, it is a very diverse community, and it's one of the largest communities with high percentages of Asian folks, so we wanted to make sure we highlighted that, right? We want to make sure that we focus not only on the African American community, the Latinx community, but also different communities that maybe normally we don't talk about as much. So we liked A-Leaf because it had big groups of the Asian population. And then Houston Heights is interesting. It's more of an affluent community, but we also wanted to highlight it because it has been impacted by gentrification. And we wanted to make sure that we were able to see how gentrification has impacted children's wellness in Houston Heights. So those were some of the reasons we picked those communities.
Sound like you got a multi-pronged approach, identifying certain areas, like you said, highlighting certain populations that may be overlooked. So sounds like you're doing a lot of data review and data collection. Can you provide us with more information regarding the Youth and Family Survey?
Yes, thank you for bringing that up, Michael. So we, before we started, or during this process of data collection, we wanted to kind of start looking at getting some context from City of Houston's residents on what they were facing currently during this time. And we asked three basic questions for the Youth and Family Survey. Basically, what are the challenges and needs that youth are facing during this time? And then also, what are some opportunities? So what are some highlights that are providing support, programs that we should highlight that are providing support for youth during this time? And we decided to launch that in December and circulated the survey for about 3 months. And we were able to gather hundreds of responses. And I think what one of the things that we're still coding responses that we have received. And but the things I want to highlight about the survey is, one, our coders are youth. So we actually have a team of high school students that we are training so that they are coding the survey and they can provide the results for the city. So that's really interesting, and just having a young team of researchers. And then the other thing that we are noticing, at least from our initial findings, we haven't completed all the coding, but from the initial findings, is one of the weakest areas for the City of Houston is the provision of providing equitable social services. So people are highlighting a few areas that they need more support in. So one of them being children's mental health. So a lot of folks have shared in the survey, and this is it's a qualitative survey. So everything is open-ended questions. So, and people are saying that they need, children need more support with their mental health. The other issues with the quality of education their children are receiving. And then the third thing was access to community centers and after school and summer programming. Parents, service providers, and youth want access to more programming, more youth service, more after school programming, especially in certain communities. There's some communities that have a lot of youth programs and kids are very active. However, there's other communities where there might be a youth program, but the parents have to drive 10 miles to get to it. So I think that those have been some of the highlights.
And you did mention a little bit about how you're using young people in regards to the implementation and collecting data. What role do youth play in this initiative?
Thank you. So we have a Child-Friendly Cities Initiative Advisory Youth Council. So we just started meeting a couple of months ago, and we are right now with the youth. We're actually developing more structure to it so that we can admit more youth and start promoting the council. But the council is made up of all high school students currently. We have about 8 to 10 students, and they have different working groups. So some kids, as I mentioned, are helping us code the youth and family survey. Other kids are helping us facilitate the community assessment workshops. So that'll be really great. And actually, we just had one with HISD librarians a couple weeks ago. And so the youth facilitated some breakout rooms during this time. And we hope to have more opportunities for youth to actually facilitate these community assessments. And another project that they have worked on is they actually curated the community assessment. So UNICEF provided a lot of the items that could be in the assessment, but the Youth Council actually picked out the items and developed the assessment. And so the assessment is done by youth, which is really great. And then we are hopefully gonna do some intergenerational workshops in the fall. And they have to happen. I mean, it's hopefully they occur in the fall. It would go by the our timeline. And so the Youth Council will be leading those workshops. So those intergenerational workshops are gonna be very important. And if you wanna participate, I encourage you to stay abreast of our Mayor's Office of Education social media, because we'll start posting on those dates that are coming up in the fall. But basically, we will invite adults and children in the city of Houston to come together so that we can present the data that we found, and then also have start creating some strategic planning on what the priority issue areas are going to be for the city of Houston, and then how are we going to confront those areas? How are we going to confront those gaps, their challenges? And we really want to hear from adults and children in the community to be able to start thinking of solutions for the city. And so, like I said, hopefully the Youth Council will be leading these workshops, and we're very excited for them to do that.
That sounds very exciting. Well, like the target audience for this podcast is after school professionals and out of school time service providers. How can after school professionals and programs assist with this new project?
Well, if you're in the city of Houston, and especially if you're in one of the communities that I mentioned, Houston Heights or A-Leaf, Gulfton, we would love to connect with your youth and provide a workshop. Like I said, we would facilitate it, so it would be a matter of connecting with youth. I think right now the Mayor's Office of Education doesn't have direct services for youth, so that I think that would be a great way for after-school programs to be able to support this work. And then I think the other way is to participate in the intergenerational workshops that are coming up in the fall. We would love the support on that. Oh, and then finally too, if they have any youth that are interested in being part of the Youth Council, we will start recruiting for the Youth Council in May. So we would love to add more diverse group of kids into the council. So if you know youth that are interested in participating, we would love to have them.
Well, I'll certainly post your information and probably some additional resources that people could look at to get additional understanding of this particular initiative.
Making After School Cool.
Laura, thank you so much for being today's guest on the Making After School podcast. We really appreciate your insight and your passion for this particular initiative.
No, thank you, Michael, and thank you for all the work you do. And I think communication is very important, and being able to talk about these initiatives and services throughout the city through other service providers is the first step of collaboration. So this is a wonderful opportunity. Thank you.
And as you continue to gain traction and the program starts to grow, I'll definitely have you back so you can give us some input on the progress.
Absolutely. I would love to, once we collect all the data and summarize it, would love to show you our findings.
Awesome. Well, as always, I want to thank our listeners for joining us for this episode where our topic focused on the implementation of the UNICEF Child Friendly Cities Initiative. Please join us for future broadcasts as we continue to explore issues relevant to the out-of-school time field.